Welcome to the Cinephile Hissy Fit Podcast, brought to you by the Ruminations Radio Network and sponsored by Film Obsessive. This is the Tyrese Film Movie Debate, hosted by two film critics, cool dads, and struggling teachers. I'm Don Chinahan.
And I am the 42-year-old virgin, William Johnson.
Oh, man. Well, let's see if we can get you a date, you know, for these kinds of things, you know, because... All right. Well... You may be a case study for what we're going to talk about today. So, yes. Ladies and gentlemen, we're damn glad to have you folks. This is all for tantrum's sake. We're shared passions and high fives wash away any place for hate. No matter what, we encourage you all to love what you love. But for now, the gloves are off and the hissy fit is on. This week, we're doing another editorial episode. We've had a bit of a series here of like three this year where, this will be the third so far. We did one on naturalish actors versus method actors. And we talked last time about, directors that are kind of like, you know, the try hard guys that kind of push everybody else away. And, for this topic, I kind of merged a little bit of them together. And at the same time, we were talking about Roadhouse in two different incarnations where the topic I said is, I think I'm going to call it this on the episode. Mitch, you can put this down as the title. It's romantic resumes is kind of where I'm going here. And, I'm talking about how, a pattern I've noticed where not only do we not have enough like romantic comedies or even romantic dramas that get made anymore. I mean, we're in a blockbuster era of movie making, but there's a whole generation of stars that kind of don't have one of those on their resume, and it kind of hurts their appeal, in my opinion. So that's kind of where this is going to go. So this is not one of those for the back and forth, high-minded case. You're not going to hear the dinger in the timer. We're just going to kind of let this topic go a little bit, but...
Yeah, I mean, when you brought up the idea to me, well, first of all, like, this is definitely more your area of expertise. I'm not a huge romantic comedy guy, rom-com, a traditional rom-com kind of guy. Mm-hmm. I'm also not a comedy guy. I mean, I like comedies, but I'm very particular. I'm very hard on comedies.
Okay.
So I'm very strict and picky when it comes to those. So
yeah,
rom-coms and... and comedies themselves, like I barely see them because they have to meet a certain criteria for me. I know that sounds elitist, but that's just I'm going to enjoy my time. But I think kind of what you're saying, an example is, part of the reason why we had the, what was it called? The McConaissance,
Yeah.
Is because for a while he was just the romantic comedy guy.
Yes, he was.
You know, it was like he's just going to be the guy that takes his shirt off and has romantic comedies with Sarah Jessica Parker and Kate Hudson and stuff like that. And eventually he broke out of that. Now, it's interesting because that was kind of happening, what I think you say is happening right now. Mm-hmm. It was happening in reverse in that situation.
Yeah.
Where it kind of feels like you could get an actor to be in something, you know, maybe intense, something quote unquote artistically fulfilling, you know, gets award attention or whatever, but then also kind of do a love story. I don't know the name of the film off the top of my head, but I know that like around the time Russell Crowe was doing Romper Stomper, you know, the Skinheads in Australia movie, you know, he was also doing a movie with, I think it was Salma Hayek, like a rom-com, you know, like he was also doing that. You know, or Salma Hayek's doing Desperado, and then she's doing the one with Matthew Perry. Like, there's kind of like, there was this time when you could kind of, even a Mark Ruffalo would do stuff like that, like where they could be really edgy in one movie and then do something kind of romantic the next. And it does kind of feel like it's missing because I was thinking about it. I'm kind of like, well, it seems like if you are a Marvel star, they're going to try to get you in Marvel movies. I mean, Marvel type movies. I mean,
Scarlett Johansson, and lock you up for four or five movies in a row, you know?
Right. So like Scarlett Johansson for a while, when she wasn't Black Widow, she was kind of doing like Lucy and Ghost in the Shell and movies that exploited her physical aspects of like fighting and stuff, but not necessarily like her charms. Now she would eventually, you know, she would do stuff like Under the Skin, and she's big enough. She's a huge enough star that she could experiment and do other things later. But it seemed like at the height of her popularity, during the Marvel era, that was kind of her thing, was like, let's just get Black Widow, but in a different costume. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until she would do things like Jojo Rabbit or Asteroid City and stuff where you were kind of like, oh, yeah, I forgot how charming she is. Like, oh, well, hey, like, she used to do Woody Allen movies. Like, you know what I mean? It's, that's kind of a lost art, really. Like, I feel I like I just don't get that chance anymore to flex different muscles.
Or the rare chance, like Scarlett's a great example, like the rare chance that I think we see her have the most charm is, crazy enough, hosting something like Saturday Night Live, where she even does like the Black Widow rom-com skit, you know, we all forget that she can do that, that she's not just an ass-kicking female presence, that she's really funny. She's married to a comedian. Like she has all of this potential to do a rom-com or a romantic drama or anything like that, but just kind of either the projects don't come, or she's not interested, or she's locked up doing Marvel.
Yeah, the SNL thing's great because some of my most memorable SNLs I remember
recently
are when you get to see these actors do things they don't do. Like two of them for me was I never say her name right, but was it Saoirse Ronan?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like when she hosted SNL, she went all out. Like I was seeing a sign for her I had never seen before. And then another one is another guy who kind of gets put into that like artsy fartsy category is Timothée Chalamet. Like he goes he goes all out on these SNLs, and we kind of forget, like, oh yeah, these they have another side to them. Why don't we exploit this? I think people are finally getting to the comedy side of Ryan Gosling, finally.
Well, I think he's had it for a long time, but his biggest stage is now, for sure. Yeah,
right. People are not recognizing him as a comedic actor. They were still hyping him up as this dramatic leading man. Now, is he good at that? Yes.
Well,
but to me, his best movies, other than Blade Runner, where she doesn't really crack any jokes, is Nice Guys, Barbie, Gray Man, stuff where he's
gets to be charismatic love.
And funny. Yeah. And So I agree with you, but it also seems like there's, much like Hollywood, takes the wrong things from everything. Like, and I'll use another SNL example. Like,
okay,
when people realize Christopher Walken is actually fucking hilarious,
I know.
Or Robert De Niro is hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
They decide, okay, people thought he was hilarious. Now let's make him hilarious in every movie ever for the rest of their career.
The balance is missing too. Yeah.
It ruins the nuance of it because, Robert De Niro is fantastic in Meet the Parents. Hilarious. Mm-hmm. And part of that charm was watching him behind the scenes in the bloopers, like lose it because how often is he going to be in a movie where like someone's going to crack him up? Right.
Cause
he's always so self-serious.
Yeah.
Now that was great. But then he's still doing it to this day, 20 years
later. I know. He's been in, like, war with Grandpa, analyze that. Yeah. Like he hasn't shaken that.
And same thing with Christopher Walken. Like when he went on Saturday Night Live and they realized he's probably one of the best Saturday Night Live hosts ever.
Oh yeah. Suddenly, but now all he's got is the ham scene.
Well, that's the thing is they can't make, you can't make us. It's almost like Leslie Nielsenism. Like, you can barely have a Christopher Walken. Like, I was shocked when
he was going to
be in Dune 2. Right. I was like, when he was going to be in Dune Part 2, I was like, oh, finally. Like, he's going to be serious again. Like, it's not going to be this kind of jokey Christopher Walken thing. And so I think what your main thesis kind of goes both ways is, like, everyone gets pigeonholed into something and they never get that chance to break out of it. You know, or if they do, then they get pigeonholed again.
Right.
Like Hugh Grant was originally the bumbling romantic goofball.
Yes.
Then he does About a Boy brilliantly where he plays an asshole. And now he's just an asshole. Like you're never going to get bumbling, cute Hugh Grant again because
we probably won't.
We
became what we played in a hurry. Well, I think so. My thesis is this. I think it's kind of two pronged. I think it's exactly what you're talking about, where it's the actors and the imbalance that has been out there in terms of what they're willing to do or what they can do or what they're even asked to do. But then at the other times, it's also this landscape. I kind of try to say where it's we're just in that blockbuster culture where no one's going to make a $35 million rom-com and put it on 2,000 screens. Like we're the eggs are all in the superhero and the blockbuster baskets, where the little movies that would be the romantic comedies are being made by Netflix right now, that are being made by little unknown actors and on the indie scene. And like the big stars that we would love to see show a little range that we get fleeting on stuff like Saturday Night Live, or even when they're on the couch with, you know, any of the Jimmies, you know, and where those few moments that we get a piece of brevity from them, it's so fleeting. They're like, man, tap that for a whole movie. And the bubble I'm seeing is, I've got this list. Maybe I'll ask Mitch to put in the show notes for this, but I've got this list of 45 under 45, like the best 45 actors under 45 years old, because I feel like that's kind of the demarcation line where most of the people on this list, there's some that are older that have had a bite of the apple or two in the comedy or romance department. And then a lot of, most of them haven't, because the generation before this, bread and butter was there for all of them. Like Tom Hanks had Saving Private Ryan, and then he had Sleepless in Seattle and You've Got Mail. Like the balance was there where you got to see him be an affable everyman. And then he was a hero. And then Tom Cruise has Jerry Maguire and Cocktail. And then he's got everything Mission Impossible. I mean, just Denzel Washington even did light roles, you know, like I know he's pretty serious actor, but even he played a comedy or two, or at least lightened up. Right. And then at some point, in the last, I feel like it's like 10, 15 years that the well just dried up, because there's like, we've got people now who are stars who at least had a little bite at it. Like you said, Ryan Gosling's done enough comedies, and here he is, you know, north of 40, where he's got that range on his resume. Chris Evans has, has done a little bit of rom-coms and came up in comedy, you know, and then like Mark Ruffalo had 13 going on 30. You've got and I'm getting lost on my shelf here, but you've got this whole crop younger than them. Like take Chris Hemsworth. Chris Hemsworth, we've seen be hilarious on a talk show couch, on Saturday Night Live, and bits in here and bits there. Give that man a rom-com, but he doesn't. And it's kind of like, Now he's just in this action rut. And then you've got a guy, and then anybody younger, like even Chris Pratt, like he tried, even if it's not a comedy, at least do a romance of a drama where you can at least show that side. And like Passengers bomb for him. But then you've got like Gal Gadot, where it's just Wonder Woman. You've got Tom Holland, who's just Spider-Man. Now there's romantic elements to Spider-Man, but he's still kind of just in Spider-Man mode. Michael B. Jordan doesn't have one. Chadwick Boseman never gave us one. Henry Cavill Superman is just wooden beefcake Superman. He's never had a good rom-com. Sebastian Stan doesn't have one. He's doing some comedies and stuff, but they're the weird stuff, like Fresh, you know?
Yeah.
Jason Momoa doesn't. He's hilarious. Doesn't have a rom-com. Jennifer Lawrence did Silver Linings Playbook. She has one. That means Bradley Cooper has one. Like, there's this tipping point of this most recent generation, and maybe Chalamet just crossed over with, like, Wonka. Even though it's not a romantic thing, we at least got to see him be lighter than usual. It's just, there's this gap. And I feel like there's a whole bunch of actors who could just be bigger and better stars than they were if they just had a wider resume.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I do. Yeah, I think the tunnel vision thing applies for all kinds of stuff. But yeah, the rom-com. Let's
like, talk about. I can keep going. Like Oscar Isaac doesn't have a romance or comedy. Donald Glover doesn't have one.
I'm looking through
lots of people here. You know, Andrew Garfield kind of with the Spider-Man, but not really, you know, like
now this list that we're looking at, this is the list is called what? The 4545, the new class of action star, right?
Yeah.
So these are,
just 45 actors under 45, you know,
that are known for action, right?
Yeah. Well, okay. Just a little, but there's kind of, I think there's a wide range of stars here. Cause like I'm down here, like Brie Larson, she doesn't have rom-com. Daniel Kaluuya doesn't have one. He's got Queen and Slim, but not a straight action. Michael Fassbender doesn't have one. Alicia Vikander doesn't have one.
Let's just for the sake of comparison, who does? Yeah. Who are some actors?
The anomalies
that specialize in, not like, specialize, who, but
have the balance.
Well, yeah. I would say, are there any right now that have the balance that you can think of?
Other than the older ones, I think Miles Teller tried with like, what's the one he did with Zac Efron and Michael B. Jordan? An Awkward Moment, where he's tried a bit of romance here or there. He's got, Zac Efron has tried. Ryan Gosling's got one. You got Chris Evans, who's got a romance on his resume. I can't say like Kristen Stewart has romances, but are they? I mean, she did that holiday comedy, The Happiest Season. Ezra Miller doesn't have one. I mean, maybe you can do Perks of Being a Wallflower, but not really.
I was just going down the list. Rare. Like, I feel like Alicia Vikander and Michael Fassbender had one together, but they're also married, so it kind of
They had the Space Between the Oceans, which is a nice romantic drama. And again, like, even if it doesn't hit huge, at least you show the range. Like even like you said, McConaughey's got some bad romances on his resume, but there's enough of them there to be like, hey, that guy could still be charming and appealing. Hugh Jackman did Someone Like You, which is an underseen romance from like 1998, and he's done The Biggest Showman and stuff like that since then.
Yeah, he might be kind of the maybe not with rom-coms, but he does seem like the kind of guy that's willing to sacrifice an image mm-hmm. to do something. Like he's able to play Wolverine and do musicals yeah. and dancing right. and
he's got the crossover appeal, you know.
Yeah, he's what about I think one guy that they're trying to do this to right now is Glenn Powell.
Yes, I think he's got great potential to be that guy. Because right, it sounds like Glenn is kind of like, he took a lot of advice from Tom Cruise doing Top Gun, where I think Tom even told him, and it's come out in the interviews, where like, hey man, don't do a franchise. Like, just be really good Glenn Powell. And I think Glenn's going for that, where like he's, right. I know he's doing this Twister sequel, and I know he hopped into Top Gun, but like those aren't like, massive five chapter IPs, you know,
right
and then he just did the Sydney Sweeney movie Anyone But You and stuff like
which
that,
which was where, a huge hit, right?
Yeah, it did well by today's rom-com standards. 60 million is a good hit. So
well, wait a minute, I thought that made like 200 plus.
Oh god, I don't know if it made that much, but like
I think it was
by today's standards pretty good, you know.
What was that movie called?
I think is it Anyone But You, did I get it right?
Anyone but you. I'm actually interested because uh-huh. I romantic comedies are not in my wheelhouse at all.
Yeah.
And I heard, like, no, 215 million worldwide.
See, that's good money then. That's fantastic. I mean,
that, how much did
makes
it cost?
More.
I mean, it probably did not cost much.
No, either. I can't. And that's the other thing is, like, I'm surprised more studios don't go for this because these are affordable, almost like if you do it right. They're like a horror movie where exactly. $15 to $45 million, you can probably get a double budget return on these things if they hit well and you have the great people that people want to see. Like people like Glenn Powell enough to show up, people like Sydney Sweeney enough to show up. I just feel like it's a lost art. Well, lost art because Sandra like
Bullock look, maybe used to have it because she used to do stuff like
well, here's the thing, like. Yeah. Well, like the 90s were like the heyday where it was its peak. Like when Sandra was cooking, when Julia Roberts was going,
no, she
and
would
Tom and
it,
Tom and like, but yeah, but like every, but she made ones of like, she would make them over and over, but then made them of good quality. Now at the same time, she turned it around with things like Crash and then things like, you know, The Blind Side that she won her Oscar for. And now she's, but she can, oh, she's got enough appeal where she can do both. Like she can go well, back to a genre she wants. She can pull a comedy if she wants to.
She was doing like and
Julia can do it too. Like Julia just did
as late as what? Like what was the one she did with Ryan Reynolds? What was that one called?
10, 15 years ago. Yeah.
Oh, at so this 10, point, 15 years. Okay, so maybe the not. Proposal. I was thinking. I thought
less that was a gap. I'm thinking. You know.
That you're right. I thought that was a lot more recent yeah. than that.
But like, okay. But like Ryan Reynolds has that movie. He's got like Van Wilder. Like he's got his. Mm. He's been able to show his romantic, cheesy, sex appeal crossover. Like girls want to be with me kind of side. We don't get that a lot when they're just pure beef in it. Like the one of the examples that kind of got me on this when I have to credit Byron Lafayette. I hate to do it, but like Henry Cavill. You know, Henry Cavill is that guy where. He attempted to kind of be a suave guy in a suit in The Man from U.N.C.L.E., which is another one of those sexless modern movies that we kind of got on the same horse with Roadhouse, where if there's a movie where you can put some sizzle in it and you got Elizabeth Debicki, for goodness sakes, like pull the trigger and you don't, but like let Armie Hammer take his shirt off. Let Henry Cavill take his shirt off. But that movie,
Alicia Vikander's in that too.
So yeah, Alicia Vikander's in that too. Like, come on. That. Like you have beautiful people not doing beautiful things, you know, or at least typical beautiful things. And I think that's a missing thing. And some of it, like I said, is the movies they're making or not making. And then even the chances they get. But I'm thinking about this from a way of like, why isn't so-and-so a bigger star? And that's kind of where Byron's post was like, why isn't Henry Cavill a bankable movie star? Well, what do you have to bank it on? He's the tough guy. He's the tough guy, second villain in a Mission Impossible film. And then he's Superman on a failed franchise experiment. What else do you have to pin your hopes on with that guy? Nothing else. Where that guy is franchise or bust. And yeah, I know The Witcher's there on television. He's got a little thing here, a little thing there. But Argyle bombed. And like at some point, and this is, and I don't think actors need to do this to like lick their wounds, but like there's no shame in like doing what McConaughey did in the 90s and the odds. Like, go ahead and make a comedy. Like, he tried that at Time to Kill, Amistad stuff in the late 90s, where like, hey, I came on the scene from Dazed and Confused. I wanted to be taken seriously as an actor. I was for a little while, but then I'm like, you know what? I need a rom-com. And then he drilled him into the ground and came back with a reconnaissance. But there's nothing wrong with that, to come back and do a comedy.
So what, let's, since you're more of an expert than sure. me on this, let's give me like a prime example, like a run. Give me like a run. Somebody that
did balance the
embodies this. That made you think of like what could have been with some of these people now. Like what's a good run with someone?
Well, I mean, I'm picking a crazy run, but like Tom Hanks. Because like if you go Tom Hanks, and I get that filmography, let me get it in order here so you can kind of see this here. So that Tom Hanks filmography, if I put that thing in order, because he's got that stretch where, all right, here we go. So if you start with, I mean, just Big Makes Him Cute, right? So 88. Then he does The Burbs, which is comedy. Turner and Hooch, which is like half action star, but a cuddly everyman. Joe versus the Volcano is rom-com. Bonfire of the Vanities is like a bad romantic drama. League of Their Own is crossover appeal. And then here comes The Run. Sleepless in Seattle. Balance it with Philadelphia. Balance it with Forrest Gump. Wow. Balance it with Apollo 13. Toy Story Just for Fun. Saving Private Ryan. Same year as You've Got Mail. Green Mile after that. Castaway, balance it. Road to Perdition. Catch Me If You Can. Same year. Like that's.
Well, he's starting to get away at that point. I think you can tie.
Yeah. Once you cross 2000. Yeah.
Right. Because.
But he did The Terminal and Try to Stay Cute. And then. Yeah, but Da Vinci Code is an action star. Charlie Wilson's War. He's a scoundrel. Like it's hit or miss after that. But that came with age. Like he got north of 40 then.
That's Saving Private Ryan. You've Got Mail might be the perfect example. You're talking. Yeah. The height of prestige war film with Spielberg and then Nora Ephron.
Well, like, and then another person who, well, it started young where, I'm trying to think here, like, or you have these guys that got one in when they were young, just enough to, like, gild them to be eclectic, even though they don't lean on it later. Like, Matt Damon had Good Will Hunting very early in his career. Yeah. Hasn't probably made an equal romance since. Like, maybe We Bought a Zoo was a bad attempt. Same thing with Leo. Leo had Romeo and Juliet and Titanic bang bang at the beginning of his career. Hasn't really needed to be a romantic lead since. He has romantic stuff happen to him in a movie, but it's never the lead. He's not making a romance. He's not making
End of the 90s, Affleck was
right.
He was doing like
he got one early.
Forces of Nature, but also doing Armageddon at the same time.
Right, right.
So,
weirdly enough, I feel like, and I have to look at the filmography a little closer, but like I feel like the two oldest guys that have gone the longest without really caving to the romantic chances is, well, Dan Day-Lewis is retired, so that kind of doesn't count, but like that'd be one of them. And then I mean, he had like Last of the Mohicans, where he was the heartthrob guy for a little bit, you know. So I guess he's got his one. But like Christian Bale, like he did Little Women when he was really young, but he hasn't really done like a romantic figure because you can't count American Psycho. he hasn't done like a true romantic lead. I want him like desirable man thing since. But of course, look at him gild his career wonderfully. So,
I mean, do you think that by doing this, let me backtrack. Hold on. Before I ask the question.
Yeah.
There was something that Tarantino said about a year ago that
rubbed
people the wrong way, but is definitely not false.
Okay.
Is that there really are no stars anymore. Like they are.
That's
like
the thing.
Do you think that by taking, just looking at a couple of the names on this list, by taking a Chris Hemsworth, the Chris Evans, Chris Pratt. Michael B. Jordan, Sebastian Stan, etc. Do you think if we give them that opportunity to become, and not that they haven't tried challenging things, but by putting them in romantic comedy specifically,
even romantic drama
or romantic drama, do you think that could bring back? Because you're saying crossover appeal would be,
I do. Yeah.
Applied at that point, right?
I do. I think, well, look at, and you have a pulse on Twitter as much as I do. Like, look at the pulse of women and what they like with their movies. Like, you've got a large demographic of women who just don't give a shit about superhero films. Yeah, there's good looking guys there, but they're there for the 2 seconds they take their shirt off. The rest of it, they're just not interested in. And then how many, if that's all they're, if that's all these quote unquote stars are doing, we don't get to see them in those other lights. But look, again, look how viral one of their little appearances will turn out when they do something funny in a comedy. Or look at Ryan Gosling blow up right now when you can do both. So yes, I think one key to crossover appeal is the ability to show that you're both, show that you're an affable, approachable person who's willing to do, put your, bare your soul a bit in a romance, whether it's a drama or a comedy. And then at the same time, hey, I'm a damn good fucking actor. Look at me go over here too. Where if you have nothing, but, you know, and I don't think we have a person who's like all comedy and nothing else right now. Like for a while there, maybe it was Jim Carrey, where like he had nothing but comedy and we didn't have any, like no one was really like hot to trot for Jim Carrey for a while. Same thing with like Robin Williams, where no one was like, you know, hot to trot for Robin Williams. And maybe this is me bringing in the Lauren Knight horny card again, but like some of that crossover appeal is here. I'll point the compass this way. It's the Patrick Swayze stuff we've been talking about since the Roadhouse episode, where that is that perfect guy who guys wanted to be him because he was like he was an attainable male in terms of like what they can be and what they can act with, and because he's smoking cigarettes and drinking, and of course has a good looking body, but he's not Schwarzenegger and Stallone. And then it was also because of Dirty Dancing, the roles that he took, and Ghost, that he was appealing to women. Women wanted to be with him, guys wanted to be him, and you had that perfect crossover appeal. And then at that point, bankability comes with that, where when you have everybody who wants to see you, then your movies turn out really well too. And for a while there, Tom Cruise had it, where, you know, that young pup 80s 90s Tom Cruise was hot to try for everybody. He did cool stuff for guys, had it, you know, was romantic enough for the ladies between, you know, little, you know, Nicole Kim in Days of Thunder, Elizabeth Shue in Cocktail. Like, he's not the most smooth romantic guy in movies. He's pretty awkward, weird dude. But like, by the time Jerry Maguire got here, he could, you know, then he could check anything he wanted to do. So he made they need that opportunity. And then even if you go like Will Smith came up with some comedy, did the action stuff, but then you hit Hitch and you're like, wow, that Will Smith is hot. Will Smith is something I want to do and be. And then you get Focus 10 years later in 2015, where you finally tap that one more time. And yeah, they just, every now and then you have to remind people, I'm a good looking star. Come look at me and do a good looking thing. And when they don't do that, then they're just actors to some people.
Do you think that, because rom-coms, at least from my understanding of it, and some of the ones that you're mentioning.
Yeah.
I think the problem with, like, yeah, Tom Cruise is obviously an extremely handsome man, right? But like, yeah. I feel like he's handsome in a different way, like than,
oh yeah,
like he's Chris Hemsworth is handsome, he's not right? Brad Pitt.
Right.
So I guess what I mean is, like, it seems like when we mentioned some of the stuff that actors were doing, like if Tom Hanks was in You've Got Mail, like for example, or Sleepless in Seattle, like it feels like, or another good one I think that gets overlooked, that's a romantic comedy, I think, in a way, is Groundhog Day. Bill Murray, not known for romance, but did a very romantic movie.
Yeah. That one right there checks the box that says, hey, if I ever need Bill to be romantic in a movie, he could do it because we've seen it.
But I mean, what I'm saying is it because the stars of those, and we can look at the women too, like
very much so.
I don't think of Meg Ryan or Billy Crystal or I don't think of some of them as like these bombshells, right? Like, is it because they are more quote unquote attainable?
Sure.
Like I feel like I feel like I've met in my lifetime Meg Ryans, right?
But this works for the Hammond Acres that you always bring up too. Like Kathy Bates. I mean, not like I said, no one's gonna put a cat poster of Kathy Bates on the wall in a bathing suit. But the fact that she has the chops, and this is maybe me building that bridge to natural versus method, where because she has the chops to do anything, comedy, horror, drama, like therefore she's believable in anything she does because she's that damn good. These actors don't get the chance nowadays, and actresses don't have the chance nowadays to show they're that damn good when they only do the same one note or one timbre every time.
But what I'm saying is, are they are they too good looking for rom coms? I guess that's my point. Like I feel like I've met Tom Hanks in real life. I feel like I have worked next to Meg Ryan. I have never met a Scarlett Johansson. You know what I mean?
You know what I'm saying? Angelina Jolie too. There's some people that are too big for it. Yeah.
So I guess what I'm saying is like.
Well, then here's the other way you do it.
Because the way of the movie star has changed. I mean, because even looking back, you know, it's almost like the same thing when you watch, like when people post a video on Twitter or something or Instagram, that's like high school in 1998 and everyone looks like they're 35 years old.
Yeah.
When you look at movie stars from the time versus now, like it almost seems like there's this transformative.
Oh yeah.
Like they're becoming more and more unrealistic and therefore they can't fit into the romantic comedy, because the romantic comedy in a sense is meant to appeal to that aspect of human nature that we can all relate to. Sure. Right. That's hard to do when you look like Scarlett Johansson.
Well, that's the other road that you can take. And that's the romantic drama. Like that's where you take The Notebook. You know what I mean? Where if you're too beautiful to be an everyday romantic comedy person, then you take a big grand story and you make us swoon. And that's The Notebook for Ryan Gosling. That's Romeo and Juliet for Leonardo DiCaprio. That's Titanic for Leonardo DiCaprio. That's Australia for Hugh Jackman. That's Brad Pitt's that's Legends of the Fall. You know, like there's not a comedy bit in that movie for Brad Pitt, but people looked at it and go, holy fuck, who is that and how hot is he? You know, like if you're too hot, then you go to drama. And then Angelina Jolie has it. Angelina Jolie has the attempt at Original Sin, like in the erotic thriller, like she kind of went there. Antonio Banderas is too hot for a rom-com, so you put him in some of these passionate big torrid thrillers. So that's either one, pick one, because both would have you show up on the radar across more quadrants of an attainable romantic person, or at least somebody hot enough you want to see go do hot things on screen, be horny again, you know.
Another person I guess we talked about in prior weeks was Swayze, right? I mean, he's known for just as many action movies, I guess, as romances, right?
I mean, I think so. Yeah.
Dirty Dancing and Ghost versus Roadhouse and Point Break, right? So, So, I mean, that's a pretty good balance. And he's obviously a good looking guy, but I also feel like I've met a Patrick Swayze.
Exactly. Yeah.
In my time I think there's a disconnect. I think maybe the reason why it is more the believability, like Glenn Powell, like Sydney Sweeney. I am actually, we've talked about this off air. Like, I get it. I mean, in the realm of beauty, she's obviously very beautiful. Not really my thing.
Sure.
I also think a little overrated. And this is I
don't see the acting chops there either. You know, like,
well, right. But what I guess what I'm saying is regardless, I still feel like I've known Sydney Sweeney's. I feel like Glenn Powell,
I've known a Glenn Powell. Yeah.
I feel like I've known a Glenn Powell.
Yeah.
I've known a Miles Teller. I think that's maybe why that was like a little lightning in a bottle, is because they still have that, but there's fewer and fewer movie stars with relatability anymore. Like,
I agree with that. Because if you go two, three generations back, you're at Newman and Redford, who balance like crazy, you know? Because Redford's got The Way We Were. He's got, you know, he's got Romance
in the Park. And
he's got so many, you know? And then, even Nicholson, if Nicholson could do this into his senior years, he had Something's Got to Give and As Good as It Gets. Like, even he knew, I have to look, I could be as cool as fuck, but watch me bed some ladies, or at least be a romantic interest. And Nicholson knew that that's a key to getting there a little bit. Even the most serious method guy is like, De Niro had, can I even name a De Niro romance? That's a tough one, but like Pacino did like Frankie and Johnny with Michelle Pfeiffer,
what was the one really early in his career post Godfather? He tried to do Bobby Deerfield or something.
A
couple of
romances
and people weren't buying it, so he went back to being a
I mean, that's Bale, that's Daniel Day-Lewis, where they tried it on for size. It's not their thing, but Then here's the thing then. And then this is also where De Niro and Pacino did. Like, even if you can't do those straight up romance, at least go out there and be funny somewhere. You know, if it's Devil's Advocate or Analyze This, like, now don't run it into the ground, like you said, but at least let us know that you've got that talent. Cause like same thing. When Robert De Niro shows up on Saturday Night Live and he's reading terrorist names with a straight face, you know, it's hilarious. You know, when Pacino is a good couch guest on the old Lettermans and Carson's, like, it worked. So, I'm the ladies have this too, you know, like, Margot Robbie, thank goodness for Barbie, has it. And then Jennifer Lawrence has Silver Linings Playbook. She's done, you know, she's been, and she just did No Hard Feelings, where she has it. Maybe the women, and maybe this is unfortunately, you know, I hate to say this, but it's probably true of the trend, but like, women, unfortunately, are probably forced to earn their keep being the girl versus these guys who can just go out and be an actor. Like Emma Stone had to play, you know, had to do Easy A and Super Bad and stuff like that when she was younger, just to like prove that she can not be, you know, a stone, ice cold stone wooden actress bitch, you know, that we're doing all that as a younger person. Now she can do Poor Things and completely put us on a straight face of not being the bubbly self that we normally see her to be, because we've been built by the bubbly self that she started as. Same thing with Lauren, same thing with Robbie. But yeah, like Gal Gadot doesn't have one. You know, Scarlett Johansson, it's hit or miss.
Well, the other thing too, you mentioned one of my least favorite films from last year, which was the No Hard Feelings. Like the other thing, the other factor is, you can make them when you do. Just gotta make them well. Like,
cause that's the thing too. Yeah.
That's the other part. Quality. Like, you could have all the people in the world be in it and try to convince it. But like, I have not seen Anyone But You, but from what I understand, it's a crowd pleaser and people
like
it, and it's made money. I haven't heard any bad things about it. But I'm assuming that might be the exception, not the rule. Cause
I think so too.
Everyone was praising the return of the R-rated comedy with No Hard Feelings, and I just thought it was really bad. Despite the fact that it was
a low bar to put on R-rated comedies, you know.
And it was nice to see Jennifer Lawrence do something different for the first time in a long time. But
yeah,
that itself wasn't enough. So it also has to be not only getting these actors to do something outside of their box, but you also have to make it worthwhile, because
That's the thing. Like, even No Hard Feelings probably made enough money that Jennifer can check that box and go, see, I can do that too, you know, like, and I don't have to just be a David Russell target, you know.
That's the other thing too, is like, if the Glenn Powell thing, if it works out with this movie, obviously is a hit, and if he ends up carrying on, like, yeah, that might be great, but like, I'm already like, okay, well, I'm glad Jennifer Lawrence could do that, but the movie sucks, so I'm not excited to see the next Jennifer Lawrence. Yeah, I'm trying to think.
The hard part is I don't have a good fix for this. Like, I have this, you know, this wish and this want to see these stars, because I know they got it. Like, I bet Tom Holland would be funny as fuck in a rom-com instead of doing shit like Cherry and the Devil. What's the whatever the Southern fried gothic horror shit he tried to do, you know? Like, I bet Zendaya is hilarious in a rom-com. We get it. We get pieces of it in Spider-Man, but like, do a movie just that.
Yeah, because I mean, she started in sitcoms, like kids sitcoms and stuff, so we know she can do it.
Yeah. So like, I this wish I have is contingent on studios even trying these movies. So I mean, low bar or not, I'm happy that No Hard Feelings got the light of day, because maybe more will come. I'm glad Anyone But You made some money, because maybe more will come. I would love to see, like, again, Barbie, you know, like Barbie greases the wheel for a zillion things, you know, and that's a good sign. I'd love to see maybe this Challengers movie with Zendaya, and like this love triangle twisted thing coming out with, I know it's tennis and all that, but like, sounds like tennis is secondary to the, you know, the relationship dynamics going on, where get a hot and heavy movie that puts beautiful people on display and shows what they can do in a different side of acting, where I hope more can come. But like, by the time I watch, like, because the other side of it is the sexless stuff we've been talking about, like most, like Fast and Furious, other than occasionally the hot girl that walks by the screen, it just doesn't go there anymore. Like, I remember Gal Gadot's opening scene in Fast 5, where she drops the sarong and she's in this great bikini, and you go, whoa, who's that? And it's going to be Wonder Woman in a couple of years, but you're like, who's that? Mm-hmm. But it happens for a fleeting moments, but it doesn't become the crux of a movie.
Right.
And then the Marvel stuff we talked about being pretty sexless. And then you get stuff like Dune, where if you're going to have this passionate leader kind of thing going on and you're in a twisted place as it is, mm-hmm. bang in the sand a little bit, you know, like, I know there's this really like half sex scene between Zendaya and Timothy Chalamet where like, I think you catch them at the end, you know, before they have their cigarette, and that's about as far as we get. And like, it wouldn't, would it kill you to just, again, show passion, show horniness, honor Laura Knight in her dreams, you know, my dreams too. So.
Yeah, I'll never forget when Eternals came out, and you know the big ballyhoo about that was that there was a love scene in it, right?
Yes.
But I remember people mm-hmm. are just so not used to seeing that even the image of the two characters, Gemma Chan and the guy from Game of Thrones, just them. Like on top of each other, naked. I mean, you don't see anything, but even for fleeting seconds, I remember there were being gasps in the crowd.
Unbelievable.
And so I think it's just on, like, and people are like, oh my God, this isn't a Marvel mm-hmm. movie. Like, I think they were shocked. And I think people are just no longer like just attuned to seeing it anymore. Yeah. That even like this, even the most slightly titillating image,
I know,
for fleeting seconds is shocking, you know. So we got a long way to go.
We do, I think. And I feel like watching some of the foreign films that we do, or even the awards contender stuff, Europe is ahead of us. Like when Yorgos Lanthimos comes in and makes Pure Things, that shows there's some mentality out there that's ahead of us. When something like Tony Urban with nude characters that just happen to be walking around, where it's Sandra Huller or things like that. Like,
there's still movies
coming out of Europe, but like that stuff hasn't crushed and come over here yet. And I can't put my finger on it. Why? I don't want to think that it's just a post Me Too thing where we just can't, it shouldn't all be on girls. Where's the female gaze? Like we talked about this in the Roadhouse show. Like this could be done with equal titillation or even equal respect, but it just, I don't know if we're all too afraid to go back to being horny again to use Lauren's word again. I don't know, you know?
Well, you're definitely right about Europe, because I mean, mm-hmm. not only has like places like England and France, like not really even cared about things like nudity and stuff, but because they show that shit on TV, they don't even care.
Oh, yeah.
But they've also demystified it. Like, I feel like in our American Hollywood image, and this ties into these stars that are unrelatable.
Right.
They've kind of demystified nudity, too. Like, you can watch some British sitcoms from the 90s or the 80s, and they'll be like a naked guy, but it's not – he'll just be a normal-looking guy. You know, like
he's –
he's got a little bit of pudge on the stomach. His penis mm-hmm. isn't like particularly huge or small.
Sure.
But no one's like laughing at that fact or whatever. They are laughing at maybe more the embarrassment of someone having to be in the room with a naked person, not the naked person themselves.
Yeah.
They've kind of demystified the idea of a naked body. Like, cause now like in our society now in America, it's like, you have to be perfect. Like no one can even take a selfie anymore without touching it up to look perfect.
Right. Right.
And I think there's that fear that like nudity can't be. I remember, I know we're getting a little off the rom-com thing. Sorry,
but that's okay. It's all of it. I
remember when that film Little Children came out with Kate Winslet.
Mm.
And one of the things that was, you know, they were praising Kate Winslet for in that one is that she really embraced the quote unquote. I mean, she's obviously Kate Winslet. She's gorgeous, but she embraced the typical, she was just kind of
less than supermodel body.
Yeah. She was the suburban housewife. Like in one of the sex scenes, like she's, you know, she's got a little pudge and she had a little like arm hair, you know, like little underarm hair. And like, and it emphasized the point that sometimes people have these affairs. It's not about finding the most banging body and getting together. Like sometimes people are attracted to each other and they just end up having sex with each other. And sometimes it's in awkward positions in a home where you're trying to sneak it in and you're not going to look, you know, like a supermodel. Like it's going to be ugly and weird. Mm-hmm. And that ugly is not the word I'm looking for, but it's not going to be, you know, Hollywood perfect. It's going to be weird and awkward and uncomfortable sometimes.
Yeah.
And you're not going to look your best all the time. And you know, I mean, I think that's where the relatability comes in too, is that we've all, you know, I mean, obviously, and it's not a surprise here, even though I opened the show as the 42-year-old virgin. I mean, we've all had sex. Most of us have had sex. It's like, you know, there's some days you wake up and you're just like, man, I feel like shit. I look like shit, but you have sex anyway. Like, especially if you're with a couple or whatever, it's not always going to be the Hollywood type of thing. And I think that relatability is going away.
I hear you.
And that ties into the rom-com, because I really think rom-com successes are not only relatability, which I think when these actors get to be relatable by being funny and flawed and interesting, but also looks wise. Like,
I think it's a desirable thing, like desirable stars to go see the next thing they do, you know, whether it's like if you wow somebody enough, whether it's, like I said, Brad Pitt in a romantic drama or Tom Hanks in a romantic comedy, mm-hmm. you want to see the next thing they do, because they emotionally stirred you one way or another, drama or comedy with romance, mm-hmm. Where that's just, it's a missing tool in the box. I wonder, here's one more tangent I'll throw out before we get too late, is sure. Has TV taken this over? I feel like streaming already has. Like, if you turn on Netflix, there's rom-coms for days on there.
Sure.
They're all the TV Bobber stuff. They're all the indie stuff. They're as cute as the old 90s stuff was. And some of them have some sex, some of them don't, but most of them don't.
Well, also,
but that's where they're getting made, you know.
Well, also, a friend of mine was mentioning, when I brought up this topic, they mentioned that, you know, it's also happening outside of America. Like, I guess, you know, I guess one of the biggest markets for romantic comedies is like Korea. Like, I guess South Korean.
I can see that.
Like, South Korean series are like mm-hmm. all the rage, because they just have these romantic comedy series that run and people are obsessed with them. And even places like Mexico with the telenovelas, they've obviously more soap opera than rom-com, but like,
but we haven't lost soap operas in this country. They still play, you know?
Yeah. But yeah. I guess what I'm saying is it's like other countries are engaging in it more willingly with success. Whereas I think America, and yes, TV, especially when it comes to movies, TV is probably.
Well, I think they've taken over the sex and nudity part, you know?
But I almost think the sex and nudity thing is a disadvantage when it comes to things like HBO, because I thought for a while there, they just couldn't make shows without pushing the limit. Like, there were some shows that did not need nudity.
And
just do it because they were on HBO.
Like, that circles back to, like you said at the beginning, like, do it, but don't overdo it, you know?
Right. I think it's so true. I think it got to the point where, like, people were like, oh man, you can actually have sex in The Sopranos or early Sex in the City.
Versus, my wife and I just binged Bridgerton. Yeah. And that's just a chase to have sex in fancy suits and corsets, the kind of thing.
Well, where
it's not overdoing it, but at the same time, it's there. It's an expectation.
I heard Outlander's the same way. It's like, it's basically time travel drama, but there's also like at least three sex scenes an episode or something.
Right, right.
But I think you're right. But I think you're right. It is more of a TV thing in terms of the horniness part. But in terms of rom-coms, I mean, do we have... I mean,
like a good rom-com TV show. That's the other thing. Like, we don't have those. Like, we don't have those anymore. Like, because like Friends and Cheers and Seinfeld and all those old Thursday night shows where, you know, finding a mate was the quest. I don't know if we have a lot of that anymore. Like Big Bang Theory anymore. Everybody loves
the whole first 5 years of Cheers was will they or won't they? That was the whole thing. Moonlighting was will they or won't they? They weren't necessarily Cheers is a comedy.
Sure.
Moonlighting is comedy. They weren't rom-coms, but like the crux of their existence was romance. Like,
yeah. And for the stars, there is the proof of concept, so to speak. Like, Bruce Willis can be appealing. Let's try him in something else, and then let's try him back in this. And yeah. It's missing. It's a shame. I miss it because like there's romantic comedies are not innocent. They're a dime a dozen, and there's a plenty of really bad ones. And the Hallmark, and I think another layer of this is like the Hallmark movie, you know, and the Christmas movie version of like where it's just ad nauseum, same plot, same thing, Willy won't they, you know, and it's so there's a whole cottage industry that's overdoing him on a really chase level and with no stars. That's not helping, you know, because someone's going to watch a star-driven one and be like, well, this looks a lot like the dumb Hallmark thing my wife maybe watched last week. You know, like, it's going to turn into that where where's the appeal when all the stories have been overdone? So maybe there's the creative bankruptcy in there too a little bit.
Yeah, I don't see. I think we are going to get to a bubble with the industry in general.
Yeah.
Where
we're close. We're
too many big stuff. Too much big stuff is losing money now. And
I agree.
I don't know if it'll ever get back to the, you know, the mid budget film thing that everyone seems to be crying for.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. I do think we'll see a scaling down of.
I hope so.
And maybe that will. Maybe what Cord Jefferson said at the Oscars will happen, where maybe there'll be somebody out there that will make 10 million dollar movies as opposed to one $100 million
movie.
You know what I mean? Like, maybe that will happen. And I think, you know, because back in the day, you know, when stars had contracts, that plays into it too. I know it's old studio system, but like, if they were required to make four films.
Two of them might be something lighter. Yeah.
Yes, they might be lighter because A, they might be like, okay, well, I got to get out of this contract, so I'm going to do something. But also they might be like, hey, I'm on contract. I get to choose what I want to do, or they're going to assign me something. A lot of the time, I mean, I know the studio system's old and antiquated, but at the same time, they also might be like, hey, we've got this really
cushy assignment too, you know, if you get it right.
Hey, we have this blonde that was, you know, making people happy in this movie as the third character. Let's make her a star, like Marilyn Monroe, you know, where they're like, hey, let's put her in this as the lead romance. Well,
look at you use the action word right there. Putting somebody of talent in a spot that is a popular spot, whether that's a comedy, you just said it, make them a star. You don't do that. I mean, you can make them a star putting a cape on them. You can also make them a star when they're beloved by every little household who just wants to turn on a nice little cushy movie. It wouldn't hurt. I think it's part of the, I think it's a missing part of the ingredient and a missing part of resume.
That is definitely missing, because I remember, you know, talking to like my grandparents, right? And they would be like, oh man, every time I saw, I don't know, Shelley Winters in a movie or something, I don't know, whatever.
Sure.
Like they had like that one star that was like, and I feel like in this TikTok-y culture we live in now, it's kind of like, like, I mean, I know it's also kids, and we all fluctuated because my biggest crush when I was 12 was the Pink Ranger from Power Rangers, sure. Right? But and everything changes. But like, you know, for a hot minute there, like, you know, my daughter, my oldest daughter, and all of her friends, it was like the Austin Butler show, right?
Oh, and then, I get
and
it.
Then, and yeah. Then you move on to the next one. So it doesn't feel like there's a staying power with the sexiness anymore either.
You know, well, because like, because they don't have a chance to do something other than because like if Austin Butler went from Elvis not to Dune 2 but to romantic comedy number 3, you know, it would be like, give him some hot girl, let him do his little draw thing, you know, like just give him a good script of something fun and he would, I'm saying, panties would drop.
You can see that. I mean, Austin Butler's a perfect example.
You can see ripe for romantic comedy or romantic drama, even too. You know,
you can see the trajectory already happening. Yeah, so
Timothy's there too. Like, Wonka opened the door. You know,
so Austin Butler kind of starts making his name with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood as a fourth or fifth, you know, not even a lead, but like a character actor, right? He does this Elvis and blows up. But then you look at the next couple projects, he does Dune 2, and he's going to do that Bike Riders, which looks fantastic.
Right.
But like,
it does look cool.
You can tell he's going down the self-serious.
He's going to be an actor.
The route, right. So it's kind of like, you can tell where the trajectory is going.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the number one person on that list you shared, Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah.
They tried in every possible way to make him a movie star outside of franchises, and they failed. Uh-huh. But the one they have never tried was romantic comedy.
But now, he's so fucking funny too, you know? Right. Like,
because they put him in the Ghostbusters remake, and he was the best part of it. But mm-hmm. that movie did not do well. They tried to make him
an action hero. He's funny in Vacation for 2 seconds, you know?
Yeah, they tried to make him an action hero outside of Thor with, like, the Heart of the Sea and Black Hat and Extraction and stuff like that. Though I like the Extraction movies, but
me too. Know what I mean?
But that didn't really necessarily work. Mm-hmm. So maybe the missing piece there is, like, hey, let's just let him be funny.
Yeah.
In a romance, because obviously people are going to find him attractive. But then, you know, in a way, they tried to do that with Thor 4.
A little bit.
I enjoyed Thor 4, but there was a lot more romantic comedy in that. Sure.
Yeah.
But there's the safety net of it being Thor and Marvel.
It's Thor, yeah.
But it showed he has the chops to do that.
Yeah.
You know, like he can be that goofy romantic comedy one. You know, I don't know. It's tough.
Yeah, that's like why
they tried everything but romantic comedy to make him a star. You know what I mean?
That's why I think we're at a tipping point, because I think Barbie blows the door open to be like, hey, take a good looking guy and let, you know, have him be a romantic lead. And look at how just the movie was amazing. And what it did for Gosling is an Oscar nominee, for goodness sakes, especially if there's some actor out there who's like, can I do this and still have reputation? Can I still have my reputation? Gosling just got nominated for an Oscar and had the moment of the night performing on stage doing it. So if I want somebody to be like, my agent, get me what Ryan got, you know? And if Glenn Powell is sniffing at that, if Timothy Chalamet is sniffing at that, and if more can follow, we're in a good spot where between the bubble of the blockbusters, starting to lose, what are audiences into? We've got these great stars that don't have something. What's the next thing they can try to do? It just takes the Cord Jefferson thing. It takes somebody to step up and try.
You know, I think there's two things with Barbie that help a little bit. One is it's still kind of an IP in a way. It's a familiar idea to somebody. So there's that safety net. But the great thing about Ryan Gosling and Barbie, and this is what they need to go back to, is everyone, a lot of men, think they're hot shit, but they're really these flawed, goofy, and kind of embarrassing people, right? And that's what Ken is, in a sense. He's kind of embarrassing, right? Like, and I think, like, what people forget is, like,
rom-coms help you look a little.
Remember when Lord of the Rings came out and, like, everyone was into the Viggo look, right?
Oh, sure.
Viggo. Now, was Viggo this?
Well, here's the thing.
This chiseled Hollywood? Lighted up thing. No, he was grizzled and had a
beard
and, like,
but you know what? He was passionate, cared about his woman.
Right. He was passionate. But those are things, whether you're embarrassing or funny or not as cool as you think you are, or you're grizzled or passionate. Those are all relatable things that make you attractive. Yeah. You don't have to be traditionally physically attractive.
Not a bit.
Viggo and Ryan Gosling is obviously a gorgeous man, but what I'm saying is like, emotionally and personally, he is not attractive in Barbie. He's a child, essentially.
Right.
So, but that is something that we can all relate to. There's been moments where I have been Ken, where I've been a complete moron. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I can relate to him. I think that's what made Paul Rudd such an engaging star.
Yeah. This is 40. He's gotten one.
I would watch movies with him. Like, I Love You, Man was a movie where I felt like I was watching myself.
Oh, all the way back to Object of My Affection next to Jennifer Aniston. He's got a rom-com in his belt, and it proves it, you know?
Right. So I think it's not only are we talking about giving them a shot to do this, not only are we talking about making the rom-com good, but you also need to have relatability. It can't just be hot people. There's a reason why McConaughey was a joke, because he was just the hot guy with his shirt off. He wasn't giving a performance.
And in all the best romantic comedies that you can list, and you go top to bottom, you can go all the way back to Philadelphia Story in the 30s, your men looked just as fallible as your quote-unquote women in matches. Like, those they're disarming movies, every single one of them. Like, Tom Hanks has flaws in Sleepless in Seattle. He's vain and you've got mail. McConaughey's, almost rom-coms are the best, where they show imperfections being, shined up to be perfect for for the person they're paired with. Like, but they come from imperfections to even be there. So, actor gets to show that too, you know?
It's a Wonderful Life. Take It's a Wonderful Life as an example. Now, don't get me wrong. especially in A Lonely Place. Gloria Graham is bombshell. She's fucking gorgeous.
Yeah. But
who is the object of Jimmy Stewart's affection is a very beautiful, but not outwardly sexy, not outwardly buxom and sexual is Donna Reed, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying we have to go back to the conservative, like, I need the housewife woman. But I guess what my point is that when we would watch something like It's a Wonderful Life, we would want to be with Donna Reed because she gave us the stability, the relatability, the fact that we've probably met Donna Reed in our lives, where like Gloria Graham is like one of those singular beauties where it's like you're not seeing a Gloria Graham.
The best modern example I've seen where it's just not hot people, but it's just straight, wonderfully, respectfully romantic was probably 9 years ago. It's probably The Big Sick with Kamal Nanjiani.
Yes.
It's got its dramedy pieces to it, but like that's a rom-com of a non-traditional, non-heartthrob guy. But you know what? Because of the way he acted, and like you said, the good material, the good script, you make him bankable, relatable, and lovable. Pullman while you were sleeping. Like there's like you don't need a heartthrob guy if you do it right.
Only issue with The Big Sick is that the only issue with it is not only is it a true story, but
it's a true story too. Yeah.
Because people were like, oh my God, a Pakistani man and a white girl from North Carolina. Like, it's almost like, in a sense, like middle America shock value.
Yeah. Like, there's taboos being broken that people aren't ready for. It's true.
So I don't know if that one should count because it's actually happened in real life.
I know.
You know what I mean? It wasn't an original rom-com idea. Like, I think of things that pushed the limits. Like there was a show on TV, and you talk about TV taking this over. There was a show called Homeland with Claire Danes and blah, blah, blah. And there was a character throughout played by Rupert Friend. And I remember at one point, they never comment on it. They never revisit it. They never, I don't know what it was, but this character, I can't remember all the details, but at one point, it's like late in the show, like the last season, sixth season or something. He's hiding out at some like motel somewhere, right? Mm-hmm. And he meets this woman like while he's out by the pool or something. They strike up a nice conversation. This woman is, by traditional beauty standards, not up to par with what people say. She's a little overweight, tall. She's a lot bigger than him.
Sure.
And they actually just have this nice conversation, and then they have a sex scene, and then it's over. Mm. And they never commented on it, but it felt – I still remember it because it felt so real, because it felt like real people engaging in an actual like, hey, we're attracted to each other. We're going to have this. They never commented. They never came back.
Yeah.
And it, that was more remembered because it, and I, and not saying it's bad because the woman's overweight or the man is whatever, but like, it was nice just to see something relatable and normal.
Sure. I'll throw another one out there. James Gandolfini and Julia Louis-Dreyfus with Enough Said in 2013.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Just again, not heartthrob people, not hot and bothered craziness, but just nice romantic, put romantic angles on really good actors and see what they can do.
Kate Winslet did one with Jack Black. She also did one.
I mean, Jude Law's in there too, don't get me wrong. I mean,
but what's the one? I think it also has Gandolfini in it with Kate Winslet. I can see the poster in my mind because it's someone smoking on a bed with red shoes. But I can't remember. I think John Turturro maybe was doing that. And
I don't know.
I do feel like for the older set, they do that a lot. Like, I think what's her name?
I mean, I just saw Redford and Fonda back together 2-3 years ago where like they've sex scene, you know, like they're 80 years old. It works for them.
What was no, it wasn't. What's the lady? Laurie Metcalf from Lady Bird. I think she did one recently, like really low key independent film, but like it was about a romance of a 60-something couple. Like, I think we're getting that in the older one, but that also plays to the relatability of
the late crowd, love and experience, the crowd who's that age watching it remembers the 80s and 90s heydays that we got as kids that they had in their prime. So this is calling back to the stuff they like. playing their greatest hit.
That's true too. So I think it still can exist. I think in summary, since we're going a little over, is
okay.
We need them back.
I would love it. They make stars. They complete the puzzle.
It would recreate the star.
Mm-hmm.
Open up the avenues for actors.
Mm-hmm.
Another good example. I remember talking to my friends in England, because I went to school in England for a little bit, and I still keep up with some people there. And I remember I was telling them about there was a Law and Order UK, like did a UK version of Law and Order. So they basically took the best episodes from the original Law and Order
nice.
And remade them for England.
Yeah,
right. And it was pretty modern. It was like, I mean, it was like mid 2000s.
Sure.
And I remember I was like, hey, this guy was really good. Like the main guy, the guy that was supposed to be the guy from Dirty Dancing, what's his name?
Swayze.
No. From Lenny Briscoe from Law and Order. What's his name? The dad in Dirty Dancing. Or no.
Yes. But yeah, I know who he means.
Whatever. And the guy was like, oh, that guy? Like, he hosts Wheel of Fortune over here. But like, but that's the thing, is like, they can host Wheel of Fortune and then go on Law and Order UK. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. they have like this wide range of stuff. By doing this, it's going to expand, you know, it's going to expand the ability for, I feel like, you know, Alec Baldwin was hosting stuff for a while, but then that was the only thing he was doing for a while. It wasn't like Alec Baldwin was hosting a TV show, starring in dramas, doing comedies on TV and doing all this other stuff. He was just kind of like, okay, this is Alec Baldwin's game show host, period. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no variety anymore. So I feel like this would open it up if it's like, hey, Chris Hemsworth's in a romantic comedy this year. The next one, he's in the Mad Max reboot or whatever. And then Eddie's Thor again. Yeah. And then he's in a romantic drama. Like,
mm-hmm.
this would, like you said, make stars more appealing, more relatable. It would give you a wider range of things that you can see.
Definitely.
It would definitely. I it's interesting. I'm glad you brought it up, because it's not really my wheelhouse, but I do see it as maybe having a key to saving the industry a little bit.
I think there's that's kind of where I came at with this, is like there's a missing avenue that would make some stars, and there's a whole generation missing it at the current. And I'm rooting for the tipping point. So maybe we're there. Well, I hope so. Thanks for diving down this topic with me, man.
Absolutely.
I don't bring these as often as you do. So thanks for entertaining.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it, because I need to think outside the box sometimes myself as well. Mm-hmm. But on that note, folks, if you want to give a nice present to your loved one in your own romantic comedy, we have merch. I'm sure. I mean, me and Don went around town in Chicago with our shirts on. And
hell yeah, we did.
I mean, we were pulling ladies left and right.
Right. And imagine if we took the shirts off.
I know that would immediately make the ladies go away. But
yeah, and it would not help the merch. You're right.
And when we say that we attracted all the ladies, it was really just Katie making us look really good by being with us.
True. But arm candy.
But yes, folks, we now have merch, from shirts to stickers. Find some sweet cinephile Hazy Fit swag on tpublic.com/user/ruminationsradio network. Follow us on Twitter at Cinephile Fit, on Facebook at Cinephile Hazy Fit Podcast, and Instagram at Cinephile Fits. Find both of us by name on Letterboxd. Check out our film reviews and ratings. We are also on Rotten Tomatoes. Thank you so much for your loyal listenership and our tussles, and for connecting with us on social media. Cinephile Hazy Fit is a Ruminations Radio Network podcast sponsored by Film Obsessive. If you enjoyed this show, the Ruminations Radio Network has more excellent programming with stellar hosts and spirited topics. Please rate, review, and subscribe to our show and others on iTunes, Spotify, and anywhere you find your favorite podcasts.